Chapter 6. The bigger the galaxy, the sweeter the homecoming. Corellian Proverb. Jedi Temple Precincts, Coruscant. Ben was trying to contact him, but Jason had his own problems at that moment. He sensed they were more critical. His mother was in trouble. He felt her reach out to him. He felt both her fear and her determination, and the latter was winning. Where is she? What's happening? Jason slipped into an alcove flanked by bushes in square ceramic pots and sat down to concentrate. Eyes closed, he could sense where she was, and she wasn't on Coruscant, but very near. It took him a few moments to realize she might be in a vessel. Listen, listen. During his studies, Jason had mastered a Theron technique that let him use the Force to hear remotely. He slowed his breathing and felt the buzz in his sinuses as if he were being woken too soon from an exhausted sleep. The buzzing filled his head, and then behind it, within it, he could pick out words and sounds. He heard his mother's voice, and then he heard his father's. "Try another braking burn."
"5 seconds."
Metal groaned. An engine boomed and sighed, a rhythmic rising and falling note, and it wasn't a reassuring sound. Jason reached out with one word, the most that even he could send through the Force.
"Together."
He visualized the Millennium Falcon. In his mind, he could see the plates of her underside and the transparasteel of the cockpit mounted on the starboard flank. He saw her as she should have been, whole and sound. He could feel Leia straining to use Force telekinesis, but he couldn't sense exactly where she was trying to apply it. He could only hear the tension in her voice and taste her growing anxiety. And he could feel another presence, too. His sister, Jaina. They hardly spoke these days, but twins could never cut themselves off from each other for long. She must have sensed their parents' crisis, too. Whatever his mother was trying to do, Jason could only guess, and guessing wasn't good enough when one was using the physical might of the Force. Still, in his Theron sound trance, he heard the bip, bip, bip of a sensor alarm, the kind that announced that a hull had been breached, or worse.
"Drive shaking loose, and it's going to take the plates with it."
That was what he needed to know. He was certain now that his mother was using the Force to stop the cracks in the drive housing from spreading and ripping the Falcon apart as the ship re-entered the atmosphere. It was a massive task. She needed help. Jason filled his lungs with a long, slow breath and centered himself to try something he had never attempted before.
"Mom, I hope you can handle this."
He pictured Leia sitting in the co-pilot's seat. Her emotions and her presence in the Force washed over him, and he visualized himself in her place, behind her eyes, seeing what she saw. For a moment he was simply observing, but then a feeling like a sigh drained out of him, and it was as if he were exhaling an infinite breath into his mother. No, through his mother. Now he was no longer sitting in the alcove between two topiary bushes, but staring at an array of lights and readouts, and at hands that weren't his. Beyond the console, Coruscant loomed in the viewport. If Jaina had joined the effort, she was hardly detectable. He had drowned out her presence in his own mind with the sheer strength of the telekinesis he was projecting.
"Take this, Mom. Use me. Use the Force I'm channeling through you."
He heard her say, "Ugh," as if something had startled her. Then he could feel pressure in his lungs, as if he were running hard and fighting for breath. He had no idea how long it lasted, but he had the sense of clutching something tight to his chest, and an awareness somewhere outside his mind, and yet at its core, showed him the Falcon enveloped in the Force, the hull around her drive assembly compressed instead of expanding catastrophically. He was sure he wasn't seeing what his mother was actually looking at, because he had none of the images of entering the atmosphere or landing. The scenes inside the Falcon's cockpit were being supplied by his memory. He was simultaneously aware both of that rational fact, and that his force power was being funneled through his mother, helping her hold the drive assembly in place by telekinesis. Then relief swept over him like a wave, making his scalp tingle and his heart pound. The Falcon was down safely. He knew it. Now he could open his eyes. When he did, he was almost surprised to find himself still in the grounds of the temple in broad daylight. Jason opened his comlink. He felt Jaina briefly, but his mind was on his parents.
"Mom? Mom, are you okay?"
Leia sounded breathless.
"So much for sneaking in discreetly.
Everything's all right, isn't it?"
Jason could hear his father muttering in the background.
"I have to see you both. Stay where you are. I'm coming."
Jedi seldom ran flat out in public, so Jason avoided an undignified sprint with robes flapping and limited himself to a slow jog to the nearest taxi platform instead. He was the new heir to the Sith legacy, and he had seen his grandfather behave in a way that had almost shattered his world. But at that moment he was just a son who was more worried about his parents' welfare than the affairs of the galaxy. Attachment had its place. Jason let himself succumb to it and put aside his growing dispute with both his father and Jaina. But sooner or later he knew that a permanent rift in the family was a price he might have to pay. Slave 1. Pre-flight panel check for Runadan. Boba Fett had rarely carried passengers. Not live or voluntary ones, anyway. The presence of this strange girl in his ship, which was more of a home than anything he owned made of stone and permacrete, bothered him. And yet he simply couldn't walk away from her. Myrta Gev had a piece of his past. That mattered a lot when he was running out of future.
"You normally board ships with total strangers?" asked Fett.
Myrta slung her bag over one shoulder.
"Are you going to kill me?"
"Nobody's paying me to."
"That's what I thought."
She boarded Slave 1 via the cargo hatch and went to follow him through to the cockpit. But he turned to block her path and gestured aft.
"I don't like co-pilots. Stay put or I'll lock you in one of the cells."
Myrta didn't show the slightest dissent. She just paused and looked around, then sat down on a crate that was secured to the port bulkhead. She opened her bag and rummaged in it before pulling out a chunk of something that she unwrapped and began gnawing. Fett stared at her.
"Dinner," she said. "I always carry rations. Just in case."
Fett fought back a reflex. His instinct was to tell her she was a smart kid.
"Yeah, I don't do in-flight catering," he said, and swung through the hatch into the main section of the ship.
The internal bulkhead shut behind him, because, smart kid or not, he wasn't taking any chances with her. He wasn't quite as agile as he'd been a year before. Just moving around in Slave One's awkward spaces was uncomfortable now. It wasn't pure pain, but he felt that before long it would be.
"Don't forget you're dying, Fett."
He settled into his seat and fired up the ship's drives. Checking the internal cam circuit that gave him a view of each of Slave One's compartments, he caught a shot of Myrta leaning back against the bulkhead, eyes closed, arms folded across her chest, apparently dozing. Nothing seemed to faze her. He approved of that. There were always women in the galaxy, and men come to that, who reckoned they were tough, but seemed to think that was about a smart mouth and a fancy weapon. The truly tough ones, Fett thought, were the ones who could take anything in their stride and finish the job. Myrta Gev showed every sign of being genuinely, quietly tough. Fett didn't like anybody much, but he didn't dislike her, although the thaw didn't extend to having her sit up front with him. He laid in a course to Runadan. His stomach rumbled. Maybe he should have grabbed some of Bevine's coin crabs after all. He whiled away the next few hours watching the stock prices from HNE, and wondered what he might say to
town we when he finally caught up with her. He had no doubt that he would. Fett dozed, reclining in his seat. When he slept, it was never deeply. The padded rim of his helmet was just soft enough to stop short of cutting into his neck, but too hard for complete comfort when he let it take the weight of his head. Sometimes he would drift in a few seconds of hazy disorientation, half awake, sounds magnified, able to see through a transparent barrier. He wasn't in the confines of his helmet, but somewhere else he didn't recognize. It was a recurring impression. Town Wee had once told him it was the legacy of being gestated in a glass tank like the other clones, and that they all had distant memories like that. It was a kinship of sorts. He found his mind wandering, thinking how they must have felt to know their days were numbered, just like his were now. And that was another kinship. I'm dying. Maybe dying feels like this. I ought to know by now. The navigation sensors woke him with an insistent pulsing tone to warn him Slave One had dropped out of hyperspace, and he snapped upright and alert. His joints hurt. He ignored the pain. In the view screen, the red-streaked crescent of Runadan grew larger until it was the entire sky. It was another heavily populated planet whose habitable zones were crammed with cities. But at least it wasn't as grim as Bonadan. Fett punched up the local data on his console and began his descent. Runadan still had a few green spaces and attractive buildings, and even a few wide rivers snaking through the northern hemisphere. It was the kind of place that was home to a mix of the highly educated scientists who developed products, the people whose task it was to make their lives more pleasant, and the majority, who worked in the factories and laboratories that produced the goods that the elite invented. It was exactly the kind of place Town Wee might be, if she could take the sunlight. Kaminoans didn't like clear skies. Fett disguised Slave One's armaments with a sensor screen and prepared to land. If anything went wrong, he had the firepower of a small warship to get out of trouble. Turbo lasers, ion cannon, torpedoes, and concussion missiles. He'd added conventional armor-piercing detonite ordnance on the last refit, just in case he was ever low on power and stuck in a tight corner. Leaving things to chance was for amateurs. Banking over the capital city of Varlo, Fett thought Slave One should be his final resting place. He didn't want her left behind. He had a sudden vision of setting a course out of the galaxy in his final days, and letting the ship carry him as far as she could on her fuel cells, and then drifting forever where nobody would follow. It was reassuring. Pack it in. You're not dead yet. But if that's not an admission that you haven't a clue what your life's been about, then I don't know what is. He picked up the automated air traffic control and sat down at the first spaceport he could find. Slave One settled gently on her landing struts, the dampers yielding as she sank half a meter, and then came to rest. The drive cooled, sending a characteristic decelerating ticking through the hull that eventually fell silent. Fat? He glanced up at the screen that gave him a complete view of the cargo bay. Myrta had stood up and was stretching her arms like an athlete, pulling one arm across her body, then the other.
Are you taking me with you?
No.
So you're just going to leave me locked in here while you go off?
I wouldn't let anything happen to this ship. You're safe as long as she is.
He set the intruder defenses and stood up to check his personal weapons. Runadan didn't have a no-weapons law like its sister planet, Bonadan. But it was corporate sector, and so some restraint was called for.
And don't mess with the controls back there. You won't like what happens if you do.
He waited for an argument, but she just sat down again and started dismantling her blaster. He paused to watch. She was calibrating and cleaning it.
The kid certainly took her weapons seriously. Most people just expected their hardware to work properly without maintenance, which was a good way to end up dead. Fett was impressed that she wasn't among them. He stepped out of the cockpit hatch and walked to the terminal building, checking data on the display that appeared in his visor as he walked. The planet was a research and development center. Somewhere there'd be a place where people whose job was to keep an eye on what companies did would gather to discuss business. Fett reasoned that it was a good place to start. And like all commercial planets with plenty of job openings, Runadan attracted a cosmopolitan population. A man in Mandalorian armor with a jetpack attracted almost as little attention as a Duros, but a lot less than the two blue-skinned Chiss who were wandering around the concourse in blue suits that matched their skin exactly. Fett took the opportunity to slip into one of the passport control lanes and select his most benign identicard for presentation to the female official securing the barrier. The woman scanned the readout on the screen in front of her, then eyed his battle-scarred armor suspiciously. She didn't ask him to remove his helmet.
"What brings you here, Master Vet?"
There was a lot to be said for Mandoa, even if he didn't speak much of it. "Looking for security work."
"What kind?"
Now that was helpful. "Pharmaceuticals. Banks and personal protection got too rough." She looked at him warily, as if trying to squint past the visor.
"I thought you Mandalorians were supposed to be hard cases."
"I'm not getting any younger."
"None of us are."
She handed him back his bogus ID card.
"They're always hiring here. Industrial espionage is our national sport."
She jerked her thumb over her shoulder.
"Head into town on the monorail, and you'll find the job agencies on the main route. And if you don't get hired in 5 days, you're out of here, okay? We don't like vagrants."
So she had some knowledge of Mandalorians, but not of him. Vet was just the pure Mandoa form of Fett. It was surprising how close you could skate to the truth without anyone noticing. He touched his glove to his helmet in what he hoped was a deferential gesture, and strode on. Most of the time, one of his tactics was being Boba Fett and not disguising the fact. When you had that kind of reputation, it did a lot of the work for you. Bounties found, it was definitely smarter to surrender to him than to try to run, because there was nowhere to hide from Fett. But he felt a little discretion might get him closer to Town Wee a lot faster. Time wasn't on his side. Sometimes, too, it amused him to play a man down on his luck, when he was actually one of the wealthiest individuals in the galaxy. But fortune wouldn't be worth a mott's backside if he didn't find a cure. "So, when are you going to draw up a contingency plan? You never were much for long-term strategy. There'll come a point where you have to decide whether to go on looking for co-sized data or to prepare for death. So what are you going to do with all those credits?" Boba Fett took the monorail into town with a dozen people who didn't have personal transport. They ranged from the obviously poor to the eccentric, and two Rodian tourists studying holomaps of Varlo. One of the passengers, a man a lot taller than Fett, was swathed in a black cloak with a hem that swept the dust and debris on the carriage floor, giving the cloth a permanent gray border. Nobody even glanced at Fett. These weren't people who dealt with bounty hunters. He might have been a household name, but the households where his name was known tended to be those who could afford plenty and were motivated to pay it to solve their problems in a very permanent way. The people here didn't fit the bill. Fett got off at the terminus and merged into an anonymous crowd of shoppers. The stores here were mid-market, the kind that clerical and technical staff would use. He walked into a clothing store and looked at the selection of men's fashions displayed as holograms above a dais. "Is this the best you've got?" he said to the salesman.
"If sir wants to impress, sir needs to shop on the waterfront," said the salesman stiffly. "If sir has the credits, that is."
Fett assumed he met one of the artificial rivers that he'd seen from the air. He looked over a voluminous dark tunic and cloak, not unlike the one he'd seen the man wearing on the monorail. "I'll take this, and a hold all."
"Size?"
"Measure me."
"Might I see your credit, chip, sir?"
Fett dumped 2 cash credit discs, 100s, on the counter. "Will this do nicely?" The salesman took a stylus from his jacket, flipped the discs over, and checked the holostamp under the stylus's beam of UV light.
"Yes, sir."
He flicked the stylus with his thumbnail, and the instrument spat a thin beam of red light.
"If sir would mind removing his armor, then I can measure."
"Over the armor."
"Sorry."
"The armor stays. I'm not the trusting type." The salesman hesitated for a moment, but swept the laser across Fett from side to side, and then top to toe, studied the precise measurements on the stylus's display, and shrugged.
"Large," he said.
"I can see you're a professional." Fett took the hold-all and the clothing and headed for the nearest public refreshers. It was cramped in the cubicle, but he slipped off his jetpack and rocket launcher, dismantled them into sections, and put them in the hold-all. The cloak and tunic draped over his armor just fine after that. Then he hesitated before removing his helmet. It was the ultimate disguise. Apart from his doctor and a few Kaminoans, nobody knew what he really looked like any longer. He might even have changed too much for Town Wee to spot him. He stared into the mirror above the basin, and with a few seconds' detachment, saw a man on the edge of genuine old age, hair mostly gray, face largely unlined, having been protected from sunlight for almost as long as he could remember. Even the scars from the time he escaped the Sarlacc acid gut weren't that conspicuous now. He could pass for any fit man in his early 70s. Firfak. In a suit, I might even look like a gentleman. And that was what he needed to be right now. If he was going to find out where the scientists at Arumed lived, he had to look as unlike a bounty hunter as he could. Boba Fett strode out of the refreshers and into public view without his helmet for the first time in his adult life.